Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 23rd of July, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Ian, Angela, Helen, Mina, Simon, and Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen. From the latest tech trends to our trusty garden friends, we have some fascinating news and information from the Black Country. And you'll have to be sharp of mind as well, as we have another challenging I Spy brain teaser quiz from Soundings contributor Lindsay. We have another episode of our sports feature rewinding back to the magical moments of 1990, where local footballing hero Steve Bull is representing the Black Country at the greatest show on earth, a FIFA World Cup and Italia 90. There sure has been a familiar feel to the weather of late. How long will the spell of sunshine and showers last? We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week. And careful use of rainwater can help to keep any fresh produce or flowers we may be growing in our gardens going. So, with thanks to the gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, we have some seasonal tips and ideas on gardening priorities for July. Local news to start, though, with a focus on lighting and not just the impact of greener and more sustainable solutions, but how enhanced lighting and good lighting can allow us to make the most of our sight.
A proposal to replace more than 15,000 street lights across Staffordshire with energy-efficient LED lights has been approved. The initiative, which was given the green light at Staffordshire Council's Cabinet meeting on Wednesday, is expected to save the county £1.2 million in energy costs each year. The £4.9 million forms the next phase of the Council's Invest to Save programme and will see thousands of older orange streetlights replaced with modern LEDs. LED lights use less electricity than traditional orange streetlights and last anywhere between 20 to 25 years, while traditional streetlights typically last only 4 years. The project will be delivered over 2 years by E.ON, which manages the county's highways lighting network on behalf of the council. Peter Mason, Staffordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Strategic Highways, said, "Now that the proposal has been approved, we can move ahead with replacing the further 15,000 streetlights with LEDs. These lights are not only longer lasting, which reduces the likelihood of outages, but they're also 60% cheaper to run than the old streetlights they're replacing. They'll also improve public safety." The upgrades will be funded through the County Council's Private Finance Initiative, PFI Reserve Fund, which is ring-fenced for street lighting improvements. Phase 1 of the Invest to Save scheme, approved in 2020, saw 47,955 streetlights upgraded to LED, with the programme completed 6 months ahead of schedule and having since delivered energy savings of £2.2 million per year. The County Council already specifies that any new road improvement schemes, asset replacement works and new housing developments should all have LED street lighting. Mr Mason said, "So far, the Invest to Save initiative has helped us save £2.2 million per year on energy costs. With the next phase now approved, we expect to save an additional £1.2 million annually, continuing our commitment to public safety and financial responsibility. Luke Ellis, Head of Lighting and Grid at E.ON UK, said, "We are focused on delivering innovative and efficient solutions that help ensure the energy that is vital for our communities is as sustainable and affordable as it can be. By using the latest in LED technology, this upgrade will not only improve the quality of the lighting for people of Staffordshire, but provide long-term benefits in terms of lower energy costs while helping the council to meet its environmental goals." Now, you may recall how, over the past few editions of the Talking News, we have looked at how the summer sunshine can affect our eye health and the importance of protecting our eyes not just from sunlight, but from the discomfort and sensitivity from artificial lighting too, with low vision age such as wraparound filter glasses. We continue that focus this week with a useful reminder from leading sight loss charities in the UK of the needs and benefits of enhanced lighting for anyone experiencing sight loss and how good lighting can allow us to make the most of our sight.
Lighting at home. Good lighting at home is important, particularly if you have poor vision. Light becomes more important for all of us as we age. By the age of 60, we need 3 times more light than in our 20s. If you add a sight loss condition to this, the figure can double. So a 60-year-old with sight loss will need approximately 6 times more light than a sighted 20-year-old. There are 3 types of lighting: natural daylight, general lighting, and task lighting. Natural daylight. Make the most of natural daylight while controlling glare. Open curtains wide and keep windows clean. Remove net curtains. Use vertical blinds, not horizontal. They're easier to control light levels and enable you to change the direction of light coming into the room. Roller blinds can help you control the amount of light coming in and prevent it shining in your eyes. Blue block filter lenses in glasses can improve contrast and reduce glare. General lighting. General lighting needs to be bright and even and not cause glare. Try to make the lighting similar in all rooms so that you don't have to adjust to new light levels as you move about the home. Stay safe by keeping halls and stairs well lit. Leaving hall lights on can help you move safely around the home at night. Use colour and contrast for light switches to make them stand out. Paint walls in matte, pale colours to reflect light into a room. Task lighting. Extra lighting is needed for activities like reading, preparing food, or other close work. Effective task lighting can really help. It can be helpful in the kitchen. Under cupboard lighting can be very effective for lighting work surfaces. Make reading easier by improving the contrast of text on the page. Make it easier to identify colours. Help to break through mistiness in vision. Reduce the amount of magnification needed. Task lamps need to be positioned below eye level, shining onto the task, not into your eyes. They should be stable to avoid getting knocked over, and the bulbs should stay cool to avoid discomfort or even burning yourself. When buying a task lamp, consider, what activities do you want it for? Would a tabletop, floor standing, or wall-mounted one be best? How easy is it to adjust its position to get the light where you need it? Does the shade stop the light shining directly into your eyes when the lamp is positioned below eye level? The amount of light needed varies from person to person. To find the right level for you, start with the task light further away from the object you need to see, and then move it closer slowly until you find the amount of illumination comfortable for you. Halving the distance between an object and the light will create 4 times more light on the subject. If you are using a magnifier with a task lamp, keep the magnifier parallel to the light so that you look through it onto a well-lit object. Don't put the magnifier under the light because this causes annoying reflections and pools of light on the object. Keep some background light on when using task lighting to reduce glare and fatigue.
Tips for effective lighting. Have several lights in a room rather than one bright light and position them to get an even spread of light with no dark corners. Shade bulbs so that they do not shine into your eyes. Check the maximum bulb rating for light shades to make sure you're using the correct bulbs. Round paper shades are good at diffusing light in the room. Avoid using lampshades or spotlights where you can see the bulb. Use uplighters to bounce light onto the ceiling and back into the room. Spotlights are effective for lighting specific areas in a well-lit room, but can cause confusing bright and dark patches and glare if used in isolation. Dimmer systems can be used to vary the amount of light needed. Light bulbs. Traditional tungsten light bulbs have been phased out because they get hot and use a lot of energy. New low-energy efficient bulbs get bright very quickly, are cost-efficient to run, and come in a range of brightness levels, shapes, and fittings. Types of light bulbs. Light-emitting diodes, LEDs, offer instant, crisp, bright light. They tend to be more expensive than other products, but can save money as they are long-life and energy-efficient. Compact fluorescent bulbs, CFLs, are fluorescent tubes curved or folded into various shapes and compact enough to suit a range of light fittings. They are energy efficient and long-life bulbs. They may take time to reach full brightness, but there are quick start products that warm up faster. Unfortunately, most CFLs can't be used with standard dimmer switches. Fluorescent tubes produce less heat and use less energy. A single long straight type of this bulb is often used in the kitchen. Replacing these with simple lights will provide even more light. LED lights are now available as a bulb version or in a strip light format similar to the traditional CFL strip light. Halogen lighting produces a very bright light but gets extremely hot. Avoid the narrow beam spotlights. Be careful when changing halogen bulbs. Use a cloth. The natural oil on skin will damage the bulb. Halogen lighting is cheap and provides instant brightness, but isn't as energy efficient as CFLs or LEDs. The brightness of the bulb is measured in lumens. The higher the lumens, the brighter the light. Colour temperature. Light bulbs come in a variety of colours or light temperature. This is measured in Kelvin. The lower the K, the warmer or yellower the light will appear. The higher the K, the cooler or whiter the light will appear. For areas where ambiance is the priority, such as living rooms and dining rooms, warmer light temperatures are often preferred. Where function is the priority, choose higher light temperatures instead. Light bulb ratings. An old 60 watt bulb is roughly equivalent to 15 watt CFL, compact fluorescent tube, an 8 watt LED, light emitting diode, and around 800 lumens. Lumen is an indicator of brightness. An old 100 watt bulb is roughly equivalent to 27 watt CFL, an 18 watt LED, and around 1550 lumens. Up next, we hear from Helen, who, as usual, has our latest beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen at Beacon and I am here with your weekly update of everything that's been happening. Now first this week, we want to give a huge thank you to the incredible team at the West Midlands Billiards and Snooker Association for their continued support of Beacon. We are so thankful for their generosity and for choosing Beacon as one of their charities to raise funds for. We recently attended a check presentation where they handed over an incredible £625 to support the vital work we do for people living with sight loss across the region. Thank you very much, guys. Now, next this week, exciting news for families. Yep, get ready for a heartwarming adventure with everybody's favourite bear. We're thrilled to announce a free, relaxed and accessible screening of Paddington in Peru for children living with sight loss, along with their parents, siblings and carers. This special audio-described film, screened by Black Country Touring, is designed to be enjoyable and inclusive for all. It will take place on August the 27th. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. and the film starts at 1 p.m. It will take place at our centre in Sedgley. And yeah, great news, the snacks are on us. So spaces are limited, so booking in advance is essential. To book your free tickets, call us on 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Now, did you know it has recently been Black Country Day? Yep, here at Beacon, we are so proud to have been part of this brilliant region for 150 years. So from all of us here at Beacon, here's to keeping it Boston for many, many more years to come. Now, last this week, what would you say to the future? Well, you can be part of Beacon's 150th year legacy by adding your message to our time capsule to be opened in 2100. Wow. Well, if you can donate to our Preserving the Past, Empowering the Future campaign to support our work, your message will be printed and sealed in the capsule, a lasting part of our story. You could share what Beacon means to you, a message of hope, a tribute to someone special, or thoughts on inclusion or community. To take part, all you need to do is make an online donation, which you can do via our website, or get in touch and we can help sort it out for you. The number's 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Now that's it for this week. I'll be back again soon with another update. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
Residents can now take greater control of their health thanks to the rollout of new self-service health kiosks at GP practices across Wolverhampton. The easy-to-use kiosks are designed to be used prior to appointments, allowing people to check vital signs such as blood pressure, height and weight, and complete health questionnaires related to long-term conditions like asthma, diabetes, and hypertension. This will empower people to have valuable information in advance of their consultations to enable a more informed conversation. Though primarily intended for use before an appointment, people will be able to use the kiosks on an ad hoc basis, subject to availability, if they wish to check particular aspects of their health. Councillor Obaider Ahmed, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, said, "We are delighted to introduce this innovative service across GP practices in the city. It represents a significant stride forward in enhancing patient experience and supporting streamlined clinical pathways. The health kiosks are simple to use. Patients will log in with their name and date of birth and then follow clear on-screen instructions. Once completed, results are securely integrated into their medical record, ensuring continuity of care. Enabling patients to complete routine checks in advance means healthcare professionals can focus more on important conversations and decisions during appointments. It helps patients stay involved and makes the whole process smoother for healthcare colleagues." Andrea Smith, Assistant Director of Digital and IT at the Black Country Integrated Care Board, added, "It was a pleasure to work collaboratively with the City of Wolverhampton Council and GP practices to make this support available for our patients." The kiosks are available at selected GP practices across the city, with each primary care network, PCN, assigned a location, ensuring that every registered patient in Wolverhampton has access.
Staying with the latest technology, and virtual reality technology is being used to train new police officers to provide an insight into male crimes against women. West Midlands Police has said it is the first force in the UK to partner with training provider Calico to deliver the interactive sessions to 700 new recruits by April. Officers wear virtual reality headsets, which places them in the shoes of a woman travelling through Birmingham after dark. The force said the classes were part of a wider approach to address crimes such as stalking, harassment, rape, and domestic abuse. The simulation allows officers to make decisions throughout, following four different routes through the city via park, taxi and bus. In each scene, users hear the real voices and lived experiences of women, which helps them fully immerse themselves in the experience and understand the incident from the victim's point of view. West Midlands Police said its male officers were benefiting the most from the project. PC Aaron Whittingslow said, "I've never experienced the world as a woman does. The session has thrown me into that world through the virtual reality goggles, and we've had some good discussions with female colleagues. It's really made me think about how I'd support victims, how my actions may be perceived, and, as a new dad, the kind of world my daughter will grow up in." The force said, while colleagues already completed a variety of training to ensure they were able to tackle violence against women and girls, this scheme would better equip officers to protect victims. Assistant Chief Constable Jen Mattison, force lead for violence against women and girls, said, "I'm proud to see West Midlands Police leading the way by providing training opportunities like this in our committed approach to tackling violence against women and girls. This session is one of many tools that we are investing in as a force to protect the communities we serve, and we will continually invest time, money and effort to combat violence against women and girls."
Sticking with innovation, and a new fleet of trucks are set to launch next year, coming in as part of Dudley Council's new household waste service. It will see separate collections for garden waste, recycling, general waste, and food waste. The new waste strategy will see a weekly food waste collection introduced and changes to the current refuse and recycling collections. And in a bid to encourage children to take part in a truck naming competition, Dudley Council's waste service team will be attending a few final events this summer. The team has already been to Himley Hall's Under Fives Day and Armed Forces Day, as well as Stourbridge Carnival, where children were able to climb aboard a waste truck and find out about recycling. It's part of a competition for children who live or go to school in the borough to name the council's new waste trucks, with the opportunity to win a £300 prize for their school. Entries can be made in person at the next few events: Saturday 26th of July in Brierley Hill Town Centre, and Sedgley Fun Day, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m, Sunday 27th of July at 10 Score Playing Field in Sedgley. All winning pupils will receive a certificate of achievement and a photograph of their vehicle once it is on the road early next year. The top three will receive a visit at their school from the Mayor and Mayoress, who will personally present the £300 prizes to be used to buy resources and equipment for the school. Councillor Peter Lee, Mayor of Dudley, said, "We found that children have loved having the opportunity to explore one of our waste trucks at earlier events this summer. And while the trucks won't be able to make it to the final three events, we hope that youngsters will still come along to see us with their suggestions. We've had some fantastic entries already, and I'm looking forward to seeing more entries come in. You can give your truck any name you like. All we need is a short sentence alongside it explaining why you chose that name." The competition runs until the 27th of July. Entries can also be hand-delivered to Reception, the Council House, Priory Road, Dudley, DY1 1HF for the attention of Claire Waldron, or can be scanned and emailed to capa.admin@dudley.gov.uk. Time now for a brain teaser with an audio descriptive I Spy activity quiz. This week, TNF Soundings contributor Lindsay's challenging us all to find as many ball games as we can from this one-way conversation brain teaser.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Clean sweep brain teaser at the Bowls Club. Welcome to Lindsay's Ear Spy activity for yourself or with others. Listen carefully to this one-sided imaginary telephone conversation and find out how many ball game names you can recognise along the way. The correct number will be announced at the end. I'm just polishing up the trophy cabinet, Jackie, before the annual dinner and awards ceremony. Ready for several new ones, hopefully. Not too bad for space if I pull the old trophies together on the bottom shelf. Yes, there's some interesting feedback from the club open day. Billy Ards unlocked and went straight to inspecting the lawn, so he won't be around to object. Besides, perks of the job is reading through the comments. Seems this person misunderstood the banner. Naturally assumed, due to size of the clubhouse, that the taster sessions would be carpet bowls inside, not outside. When parked and walked round the immaculately trimmed hedge, noticed the grass. Then was told that my footwear was unsuitable. Balancing barefoot on a mat was hardly dignified, but managed to shorten the vast gulf between ball and jack okay. Jess Hurling, Wolverhampton. They are a bit overprotective of the lawn. Why they have the reinforced tall hedging keeps the football players from sending any balls into their penalty area. These folk found something else strange at the club. Ducked into the lounge area during the rain shower. Same idea for one family who were watching a nature film on their smart device. Suddenly, we all became aware of a chirping noise, which persisted despite the film being turned off. After some joint detective work, we discovered a cricket had also chosen to shelter from the weather, returned it safely to the wild. Unexpected highlight of the day for the kids. Ivor Court, security counts, Stratford-upon-Avon. Obviously the type of business and initiative the club needs. Not just finances, Jackie. Someone sports motivated like your tennis partner would do. Except he would rather go to the snooker halls than the fundraising quiz nights. It's true. Hardly trendy enough to get the coverage or sponsorship deals like big league basketball. Still, competition can be fierce simply holding on to volunteers around here. Just ask the regional croquet team about their abroad tournaments. Talking of international customs, brought along our French house guests who got a little lacrosse about queuing to try out the mini games. Then struggled to master the basic throwing technique. Nothing like launching balls, but did enjoy themselves when ended up with tea and homemade cakes. David, Belinda and friends. Rugby, Warwickshire. Why do you need to rush off and cook a stuffed butternut squash in advance? Oh, right, because Stefan is trying out for the boccia team tonight and needs extra time to unload his wheelchair for a warm-up session. Okay then, Jackie. Wish him all the best. Bye for now. Did you recognise the ball games mentioned? Total count was 16. Lawn bowls is said to have been derived from throwing objects at a target back in ancient times, possibly Egypt, and definitely played by Romans. The 13th century was when bowls were introduced to Britain, and the use of flat greens and clear rules, still used today, were defined by Scotland. The larger wooden ball became called a bowl, and the smaller target ball either called a jack or kitty. The oldest bowling lawn in the world is the Southampton Old Bowling Green, which was established in 1299. During more recent history, in 1975, the Visually Impaired Bowls England, or VIBE, organisation was established. They now provide access and assistance to over 50 clubs, allowing visually impaired people to play bowls.
TNF Soundings.
I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. A striking new piece of public art that celebrates a town's cultural history and identity will be unveiled next week. You Are Here is the first public sculpture for celebrated artist Tom Hicks, which he created with the support of his local community in Halesowe in Dudley. The large blue, pink and white metal structure includes the engraved trade names and typefaces of local businesses and is part of a new transport hub and green public space on Cross Street. Mr. Hicks, who was commissioned by Birmingham's Icon Gallery in partnership with Transport for West Midlands, said, "It was a wonderful opportunity to celebrate the visual landscape of the Black Country." The self-taught photographer used a smartphone to take images in Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton, which he shared with his thousands of Instagram followers on Black Country Type. As part of the design process, Hicks also ran a series of photo and poetry workshops for members of the public in collaboration with Black Country poet Liz Berry, which focused on local signage and typography. The trade names on the sign included the recently closed Dancers, a family-run clothing store established in 1880, alongside Carpets, The Curtain People, Franklin's and Master Nails. Hicks said the project sparked an exciting new direction for my practice, informed by my photography. I've expanded into three-dimensional work and explored materials, construction techniques and paint treatments. The artist said he had worked directly with factories in the area to fabricate the sculpture. Their time, patience and expertise have been invaluable, he added. My art practice encourages people to observe and appreciate their immediate surroundings, and the letters and symbols that appear on the artwork were all found in Halesowe. The piece had been commissioned to help build community ownership of the new sustainable transport infrastructure, said TFWM. One of our organisation's key aims is to provide customers with experiences of using sustainable transport that they want to repeat, and we hope that You Are Here helps to further this, said the organisation's Chris Brown. The piece will be officially unveiled at an event this Wednesday.
Staying in the 19th century, and the makers of Banks's beers have said a specially brewed IPA will be a fitting tribute that honours the brewery's legacy. Its brewery in Wolverhampton will cease operations in the autumn after 150 years, with production moving to Burton-upon-Trent. Carlsberg Britvic said its sesquicentennial IPA would be available exclusively at the Wolverhampton Beer Festival from 24th to the 26th of July. Julie Gale, Senior Production Manager at Banks's, said, "This is a thank you to our drinkers, publicans, fellow brewers, our amazing dedicated team at Banks's, and everyone who supported the brewery over the years." Banks's Brewery opened in 1875, but last October the Carlsberg Marston's Brewing Company announced it would close as part of a company restructuring. The brewery has had a close relationship with Camera's Wolverhampton Beer Festival since it started in 1977 and has a history of supplying limited edition beers. It described the anniversary beer as dry hopped with Antonym from Washington State, USA, and the new English variety Opus. The beer has a bold floral aroma with vivid flavours of orange and grapefruit citrus, along with a fragrant elderflower and subtle herbal hints. Ms. Gale, who led the team brewing the sesquicentennial IPA, said Banks's beers had become a symbol of craft heritage and local pride. She added, "We're incredibly proud of what this brewery has stood for over the past 150 years, and we couldn't think of a better stage than the Wolverhampton Beer Festival to share this beer with the community." Carlsberg Britvic also said it was working with local stakeholders to preserve items from the brewery. They include the brewing ledgers, which will be entrusted to the Wolverhampton Archives, along with other documents.
From something that has been around for 150 years to a game that has been played for over 1,500 years. Chess, as we know it today, was born out of the Indian game Chaturanga in the 6th century AD. The game spread throughout Asia and Europe over the coming centuries and eventually evolved into what we know around the 16th century. and residents of the Black Country can now enjoy a game of outdoor chess with new tables that have been installed at Stevens Park in Quarry Bank and Abbey Street Park in Gornal. The installations, which cost £5,000 in total, were funded through the Levelling Up Parks Fund from Central Government following a successful grant application from Dudley Council. The boards are part of a wider UK project which aims to promote community engagement and mental well-being through accessible public chess facilities. Players are encouraged to bring their own chess pieces where possible, but sets are also available to borrow from No. 92 Cafe at Stevens Park and at Gornal Library on Abbey Street. Councillor Damien Caulfield, Cabinet Member for Neighbourhoods, said, "These boards make a fantastic addition to our parks, offering residents a fresh way to enjoy their visits. Chess is a game for all ages and abilities, and these new tables provide a great opportunity for people to come together, enjoy the outdoors, and challenge their minds."
Up next, let's have another Beacon update.
If you need help with sight loss, then filter glasses might help you. Filter glasses are a range of glasses specially for sight loss, designed to protect your eyes from harmful UV rays and reduce glare and bright light, and also improve contrast as well. They make things clearer to see and your eyes more comfortable. They can either be worn on their own, or you can wear them over your existing prescription glasses. Wearing a sun hat or a baseball cap or a sun visor can also help too. So if you'd like to try the range of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life a bit more comfortable for you, then call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. You can call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
Now, here's a story that conveys a sense of optimism and hope, where you could say anything is plausible. As a dog who shot to Hollywood stardom as Marvel's Dogpaw after being crowned Britain's ugliest dog has paid a visit to a Black Country and Birmingham dog rescue centre to help drop off a donation. Peggy, who starred in the 2024 film Deadpool and Wolverine alongside Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman, went to Birmingham Dogs Home this week along with her owners. The five-year-old Puggies, a pug and Chinese crested cross, was adopted after being born the runt of an accidental litter. Peggy and her owners handed over a donation of £627, raised during Comic-Con Midlands, to the charity, which has sites in Birmingham and Wolverhampton. The money raised will provide shelter, food and medical treatment for the dogs cared for by Birmingham Dogs Home, which rescues more than 2,000 animals each year. The charity said it received no government funding and relied solely on the generosity of donors. It costs the charity £6,000 a day just to keep the doors open, and it said every single penny raised was vital. Rachel Frost, fundraising manager at Birmingham Dogs Home, said, "We were all a little starstruck to have the real-life dog Paul, Peggy, visit our charity, but are extremely grateful for her taking time out of her busy schedule to support our rescue dogs." The £627 raised at Comic-Con Midlands will go towards caring for our dogs across both of our centres, all of which are unique and quirky characters just like Peggy. Peggy won Britain's Ugliest Dog competition in 2023. The organisers, photography printing firm Parrot Print, said the judges were never in doubt who the winner would be and that they absolutely adored her. Holly Middleton, Peggy's owner, added, "It was lovely to visit Birmingham Dogs Home and get a behind-the-scenes look at the amazing work that they did. I know Peggy and I are very proud to have been able to support them."
Staying amongst our four-legged friends, and you could say this is a sequel. This July, gardeners, families and individuals in the West Midlands are being urged to create wild patches as part of a new campaign to make more spaces with natural insect food and nesting materials for native hedgehogs. The new Go Wild for Hedgehogs campaign from Hedgehog Street, run by wildlife charities People's Trust for Endangered Species, PTES, and Ludlow-based the British Hedgehog Preservation Society, BHPS, simply involves leaving a wild, undisturbed patch in a garden and recording its location online. Not only does this create much-needed food and shelter for hedgehogs, but also tells conservationists at PTES and BHPS where hedgehog havens are and where more are needed. The campaign begins this summer when people in all corners of the UK are asked to choose a patch, strip or corner of their garden to leave undisturbed, untrimmed and simply let it grow. Once selected, you will then just need to upload photos and record the location online. To go the extra mile, Hedgehog Street suggests planting wildflower seeds in autumn to further attract pollinators and other insects the following year. Throughout the year, Hedgehog Streets will share updates and top tips such as how to maximise wild patches, what to look out for, and other ways to help hedgehogs as the season change. Grace Johnson, Hedgehog Officer for Hedgehog Street, said, "Wild patches are a brilliant way to help hedgehogs, and best of all, they're minimal effort and cost. By simply allowing an area to grow a little wild and undisturbed, you can help to create a diverse habitat that's perfect for hedgehogs and other garden wildlife in the heart of our villages, towns and cities. Instead of weeding and mowing, sit back, relax and watch nature thrive in your garden. Hedgehogs face many threats and are in widespread decline. According to the State of Britain's Hedgehogs 2022 report, published by BHPS and PTES, rural populations have plummeted by between 30 to 75% since 2000. Yet, encouragingly, the report also showed that populations in urban areas may be starting to recover, likely thanks to Hedgehog Street's 130,000 volunteer hedgehog champions, and the wider public, who continue to make their gardens and local green spaces more hedgehog-friendly. The new Go Wild for Hedgehogs campaign builds on this, as gardens and especially wild patches can offer important refuges for hedgehogs and can help reverse the decline that this much-loved nocturnal species is facing. Extra ways to turn any garden into a hedgehog haven include providing compost heaps and log and leaf piles to further encourage natural insect prey and offer places to nest, leaving out shallow dishes of water and or creating a wildlife pond with sloping sides or an escape ramp. Then connect this amazing new habitat by popping 13 centimetres by 13 centimetres square holes known as hedgehog highways, in or under garden fences to allow hedgehogs to move between green spaces in search of food, shelter and mates. Several hedgehog highway signs can be bought from BHPS or PTES to tell neighbours and any future homeowners why the highway is there and why it needs to remain open. Those without a garden can still help hedgehogs too. Contact local councils and developers to highlight the importance of managing parks and public green spaces for hedgehogs. Call for new build sites to be hedgehog friendly and raise awareness of the urgent need to help hedgehogs by sharing PTES and BHPS's social media posts and talking with friends, family, neighbours and colleagues about ways they can help hedgehogs. Becoming a volunteer spotter for PTES and BHPS National Hedgehog Monitoring Programme, which can be done from your own home, is a great way to help too. To find out more and to register your wild patch, visit hedgehogstreet.org/go-wild-for-hedgehogs. And if you're on social media, BHPS and PTES would love to see your wild patch pictures using hashtag GoWildForHedgehogs.
While the decline and plummeting population of our native hedgehogs is proving to be a prickly problem, Another one of our garden friends is proving that there may not be a sting in the tail for our biodiversity and ecosystem health. For us, however, there quite literally is. As John Horsley found out when he felt a wasp crawl down his t-shirt whilst gardening. "That stung me a few times in the back," he says. "It wasn't a pleasant experience." Part of the British Pest Control Association, John is well versed in the problems wasps can cause gate-crashing picnics or beer gardens on a summer's day and building bothersome nests. After a downtick in wasp call-outs in recent summers, his industry has been busier than usual tackling problems caused by wasps this year, he says. These can include large nests appearing earlier in the season. Wasps are still currently raising their young, but later in the summer they tend to congregate in public areas, seeking a sugary snack before they die. So is this shaping up to be a summer of the wasp? "We don't have plagues of insects," Mr. Horsley explains, "but it seems that every few years, wasps will have a strong year, and that commonly coincides with particular weather patterns. This year has been very warm and very dry. It's been a very good year for them." The Met Office says we have had the warmest spring in more than 50 years. Last year, the UK had its coolest summer for 9 years. One of the world's leading wasp experts, Professor Sirian Sumner of University College London, cautions that scientific data on wasp numbers will not be released for a while. But her gut feeling is that all the signs are, based on the weather and other insect population, it's going to be a good year for wasps. The UK has about 9,000 species of wasps, most of them solitary, meaning they don't live in large colonies and are generally not a nuisance to humans. Only a small number are social wasps, such as the common wasp Vespula vulgaris, which is most common for interacting with humans. They are the second most disliked insect, bug or creepy crawly in the UK after the spider, according to a 2021 YouGov poll. But Professor Sumner and other wasp experts point out that they are not all bad. They are really important parts of the ecosystem. They're apex predators, she says. Take a top predator out of any system, like the lion out of Serengeti, it has a knock-on effect in the prey populations that will then go unchecked by their predator. And wasps are free, natural pest controllers, so they are doing jobs in our gardens, in our wild landscapes, in our farming landscapes. They are helping keep pests at bay.
Living alongside wasps without being stung. Nikki Banfield of the insect charity Bug Life says we need to look after wasps. A lot of people don't like wasps, they class them as angry bees, but they have a really valid purpose in the natural world, she says. In that wider natural world, recent studies show widespread declines in global insect populations, with some insect species being pushed towards extinction. Insect loss is linked to intensive agriculture, pesticides and climate change, with far-reaching consequences for the many birds, amphibians, bats and reptiles that rely on insects for food. But the common wasp appears to be bucking this trend, its population remaining stable over the past 100 years, along with houseflies, cockroaches and the European hornet, which is increasing across the UK and moving northward as the climate warms. Sightings of the invading Asian or yellow-legged hornet, which arrived in the UK in 2016, are also on the rise. And after a poor year for butterflies in 2024, naturalists say many common species such as the large white also appear to be flourishing this summer. Ladybirds too seem to be enjoying the warmer temperatures, according to experts. So luckily for the ecosystem, but perhaps unluckily for our picnics, wasps appear to be thriving here in the UK. So, how can we live alongside each other happily then? Miss Banfield suggests we leave something sweet, such as a small cap of jam or orange juice, a short distance from the picnic area to distract the insects. Other practical tips include not screaming, flapping your arms or swatting at wasps, as this will agitate them and make them more aggressive. Wasp stings can pose a public health risk. They can cause anaphylactic shock, Miss Horsley points out. So he has a word of advice. Don't disturb them. Try and stay away from them where possible. And if it needs to be treated, then speak to a professional, he says. Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. Well, after this week's unsettled mix of sunny spells and showers, it looks as though this familiar feel is set to stay with us for another week at least. In result, UV levels will remain varied, with levels ranging from medium to high as any spells of sunshine shall be interrupted with rain showers. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:25 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:05 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, the wet weather that we've had over the past few days looks like it shall ease off for a few days, as on Friday 25th of July and Saturday 26th, it does look as though it will be mainly dry and bright, with a gentle breeze drifting in off the Atlantic. Temperatures shall hold up at 24 degrees. Things will begin to change as more into Sunday 27th of July, with a moderate breeze heading in from the west, and with it a band of rain showers too. The wind will keep things feeling comfortable, with the westerly helping to keep temperatures comfortable for this time of year at around 23 degrees. And it's looking like this unsettled spell of sunshine and rain showers shall remain with us as we progress through the week, with light rain showers and sunny intervals expected from Monday 28th to Thursday 31st of July. The breeze shall remain noticeable, with temperatures reaching highs of 23 degrees in places. So, there we have it. Not too much summer sunshine about, but at least our garden shall be ecstatic with the current weather pattern. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Up now we have another episode of our sports feature, rewinding back to the magical moments of 1990, where local footballing hero Steve Bull is representing the Black Country at the greatest shows on earth, a FIFA World Cup and Italia 90.
Episode 5. That freer access also allowed Swain to enjoy regular chats with Bull during the tournament to pen his very own World Cup diary, delivered directly to supporters via the pages of the newspaper. The most difficult of those came after the semi-final defeat to Germany on penalties, when Bull, as in the quarter-final against Cameroon, remained an unused substitute. He had actually been asked by Bobby Robson to warm up with a view to coming on, but then Lineker equalised and extra time came and went without the opportunity to enter the fray. Chatting to him for his diary at the end of that semi-final, he was absolutely gutted, says Swain. He was genuinely convinced that England could have won that tournament, and he found it very difficult to sum up the night. But what an amazing experience he had enjoyed. Fantastic for him and fantastic for Wolves. That was the biggest wish I had after the tournament, wishing that Bobby had just put me on against Germany, adds Ball. I was ready to go on, and even in extra time, for 15 minutes or so, I was the type of striker that might have been able to get on the end of something, to ferret out a goal, as I call it. Overall, though, what an incredible experience to go and play at a World Cup and work with the likes of Sir Bobby and Don Howe, who were an unbelievable pairing. And then to be in a squad with some incredible players, and Gazza, who kept us going on and off the pitch with all his antics. Even the homecoming, Gazza with his fake boobs, and the thousands of fans waiting for us at Luton Airport. There are so many fantastic memories, and I will always be proud just to have been part of it. It was a pride shared by everyone connected with Wolves, and particularly those fans for whom the summer was lit up by the prospect of their fearless Roy of the Rovers type hero mixing it with the cream of the crop of world football.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Soundings contributor Lindsay.
Here is the full list of answers read out in the order they were originally spoken. Pool, billiards, carpet bowls, golf, hurling, football, cricket, tennis, snooker, basketball, croquet, lacrosse, bowls, rugby, squash, boccia. If you did catch all 16 of them, well done. And if you missed a few, hope you still enjoyed the challenge.
DNF soundings.
Hopefully, our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine have a relaxing selection of tips for the month ahead. As up next, we have our gardening section full of advice on how to get your garden ready.
DNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine. Watering advice to drink in. With temperatures rising, annual warnings about the importance of not wasting the precious commodity of water appear ever more frequently. Gardeners dread the words hosepipe ban, and keeping our plants adequately watered is of the utmost importance, of course. With spring having been particularly dry this year, you really do need to be on your game to avoid garden disasters. Careful watering of your plants is an essential task, says Ralph Westmoreland. In the greenhouse, where pot plants and tomatoes are growing in peat-free compost, great care is needed. Modern compost do not take up nor hold water as readily as peat-based ones used in the past. So each pot or plant in a growing bag must be individually watered. It helps too to have the pot standing in a saucer or a tray. Making your water go further can be easier than you might think. Catch water used for washing salad, fruits and vegetables in a bowl and use it in the garden. Washing up water too will do the job. And it is always a good idea to consider water butts, perfect for collecting rainwater when the heavens open for use on the garden during more parched times. Speaking of veggies, homegrown vegetables are always a taste sensation when compared to those grabbed on the supermarket run, and Ralph's plate is always filled with goodness from the garden. We endeavour to feed on Fridays the tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers and melons using a high potash feed, watering onto still damp compost in the growing bag or soil in the raised beds. Ralph shares his knowledge with children at a local primary school who learn gardening skills for life from Digging Deep's expert, but that doesn't mean they are thrilled by every task. Last year, we planted potatoes in very large pots, Ralph said. It was interesting and relatively successful, with the children tipping them out onto a paved area, picking out tubers and then tidying up. They didn't find this as enjoyable as digging around in the bed, at least not the tidying up part, but it meant that we found every tuber. This year, we are successfully growing 6 rows of early potatoes on one of the raised beds. They too need watering and then earthing up to conserve water. Early in the month, we are going to sow short lengths salad leaf mixes, rocket, mustard, pak choi, and mizumu. We make shallow seed drills by pressing down a broom handle, cut to the width of the raised bed, into the weed-free soil. We then gently pour water along its length before sowing the seeds, then gently raking the soil to cover them and tamping it down. Later, before school closes for the summer holiday, we will sow a row each of spring onions, carrots, beetroot and radishes across the now emptying beds. With luck and good weather, they should be ready for harvesting and tasting at the start of the new school year in September. We're taking great pride caring for a pot of sweet pea seedlings we were given a while ago. These cheeriest of pretty little blooms are favourites of ours, and yet we've not grown them since we were knee-high to a grasshopper or thereabouts. When ours begin delivering petal power, how can we keep them blooming for as long as possible? Sweet peas will continue to flower if those flowers are picked every other day, Ralph advises. If not picked regularly, they easily go to seed, which seems unstoppable once the process has started. And a final word about watering for this issue. Pot plants and wall and hanging baskets will need regular watering and feeding, albeit less frequently in the shade than in the sun, when it can be necessary to water several times a day. Remember, feed on Friday too, but always on moist soil, never dry.
TNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!